Based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that the fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Welcome to The Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome into another episode of The Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross, brought to you by Rotoballer. This is episode 292. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross, and with me, as usual, is my 80-grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, how's it going, bud?
It's good. It's good, man. We made it. The season's almost here. We just got one more day, and all the off-season work is here. Man, it's wild that the off-season flew by. The regular season's back. Minor leagues start on Friday, at least AAA does, which is a lot of fun, and I got a lot of lineups to set and a lot of fab to figure out because some of my fall drafted teams are really rough with injuries.
It feels weird to say we were drafting in the fall, but yeah, we technically were. And yeah, it felt weird to do fab this weekend for the first time in some of my leagues, and I had to do it from my work because I had no power at my house, hence why we didn't have an episode on Monday. Mother Nature decided to dump one last storm on us, a lot of snow, but then changed over to freezing rain, which was the real killer, and the entire southern coast part of Maine was without power. I lost it for about 24 hours, so had to do all my, went to my work, was with the generator, wrote an article there, and got all my lineups, the fab, and everything done there before I went back home to the darkness. But yes, opening day part two, domestic opening day, whatever you want to call it, is right around the corner. It'll be tomorrow when you're listening to this. I'm excited, and it's to be nonstop baseball for the next, what, 7-8 months. And we're going to do another fun episode today. Some more bold predictions. These ones at the major league level. Did the prospect version of this on Friday. So if you missed that, go check that out. That was a lot of fun as well. And before we get into the show here, the usual housekeeping. You can follow us on Twitter or X, whatever you want to call it these days. Chris is that Roto Clegg. I'm EricCross04. Show is at Toolshed Pod. If you enjoy this podcast, please rate and review. And make sure to check out both of our personal platforms, thedynastydugout.com and toolshedfantasy.com for more work from each of us, including all of our dynasty and prospect rankings. We're both going through some updates recently and upcoming this week, so check those out. And make sure you check out all the great work going on over at Rotoballer. Season's already underway, but you can still use that code TOOLSHED. Get 10% off any premium package. There's a lot of stuff to help you throughout the season as well. Or if you want to get football, basketball, whatever you want to get in on, use that code TOOLSHED, get you that 10% off over at rotoballer.com. All right, Mr. Clegg, you want to lead us off with your first bold prediction here?
Sure. We'll get a little bold. Remember, these are bold predictions, so they may be a little nutty, but who cares? This is what it's about. I'm going that Michael Harris II, he finishes the year hitting 30 home runs and stealing 30 bases. And then he finishes the year as a top 10 player. And shoot, he might even be higher than that because there's a chance if he does that, he continues to push up in that lineup. And that would be a pretty special player. We know Harris can hit for average. We know he can hit for power, and we know he's got speed. Harris, it's funny because he was so good his rookie season, 2022, and last year he was hurt, and he came back and was absolutely incredible. You look at the overall line, he had 18 homers and 20 stolen bases in 138 games, but when you filter through and you look at pre and post injury, man, he was good. From June 1st on, he hit .326 with a .535 slug, hit 16 homers and stole 15 bases across 416 plate appearances. You look at the data and it's good. Michael Harris hits the ball very hard. He had a 91.5 mile an hour exit velocity once he got going and got over those injuries, a 50% hard hit rate. Everybody wants to talk about the ground balls, but he still had it over a 10% barrel rate. Harris has gotten even stronger this offseason. He is hitting the ball especially hard this spring. And what's even better is the fact that he plays a really good center field. He's going to play every day. And I think that this is the profile that you want. I know there's been mixed reviews on what Michael Harris would do this year, but this spring, he's just showing to take another step forward. I think that Michael Harris quietly is going to put up a massive season. And the funny thing is, in his first 2 years, I know WAR's a whatever stat, but he's put up a 4.8 and a 3.9 WAR season, according to Fangraphs, in his first 2 years. I wouldn't be shocked this year if he hit 5.5, considering his defensive value and the power and the fact he gets on base hitting for average. Michael Harris, he's going to have a great year. He's going 30-30. Hits, even if he hits 290, I think that's easily a top 10 player. So yeah, I'm pretty stoked to see what he can do. Again, this kid has just turned 23. He was 22 all last year, just turned 23 a couple weeks ago. So I think he's in for a big year. Big step forward. I am very excited to see what Michael Harris can do.
Yeah, and the best part about these bowl predictions is that every bowl prediction has at least some percent chance of becoming true. It'd be crazy to do something like this guy has no chance of doing that. Oh, Michael Harris is going 50-50. Yeah, that's bold, but he can't do that. Only Ronald Acuna could probably do that. So yeah, I think that's definitely possible, and I like it a lot. I like Michael Harris a good amount, and even if he's hitting – I mean, he's probably hitting like what, sixth or so against righties and probably eighth or ninth against lefties. And that's fine. That's the bottom third of the order for Atlanta. It's better than the top third for most every other team in baseball. So yeah, I like that one a lot. I'm a big Harris guy too. I'm going to go somewhere one. I'm going to go O'Neal Cruz goes 40-20 and finishes as a top 10 player here in 2024. We know Cruz has the talent. There's zero doubt in anyone's mind that 40-20 is attainable. No need to say healthy, obviously. And where will the average be? Contact skills are leave a little bit to be desired, but they're not terrible. I think some people will hint that they're terrible. They're not. Are they below average? Yes. But contact rate was right around 70% last year. Zone was at 78.3. Chase is only 30.3%. Before that, it was 30.5. So he's been below average, but not by a lot. And with given his power, his speed, I think he's going to hit 260, 270 in that range. Obviously, he has the power to hit 40. Look at all the home runs he's been hitting this spring. I think he's leading spring and barrel rate. Obviously, they're not having stack guys in every park, but for what they do, I think he's leading spring and barrel rate by 5% or something like that, which is insane. And 17 home runs, 10 steals back in 2022 and 361 plate appearances. You know, barrel rate was 15.5% that year. EV 92 miles an hour. He's hitting. I think he had like what, five or six batted balls above 115 this spring. Power's there, speed's there. 83rd percentile sprint speed. He's a quick guy. So 40-20, top 10. And if he's going 260, 40-20, that's a top 10 player right there. And I think Pittsburgh's lineup could be sneaky good. Won't be a studly lineup, but could it be a lineup that finishes like 12th, 13th, somewhere in that range and runs scored? Absolutely. I got some players there. And I think he could maybe get over 100 runs as well and drive in over 100. Nice, big impact in four categories. And it won't kill you in the average department. And yeah, I think a top 10 season is in store. So we got a couple of fun top 10 predictions to start off this one here. But Chris, what's your next one?
All right. So, yeah, those are both fun. I'm going to go to the catcher because catchers are fun, right? Or they should be, but this guy is making catchers fun again. That's Francisco Alvarez, 22-year-old catcher with massive pop. I don't think this is even outlandish. This may not even be a huge, you know, bold prediction, but I'm going to say he hits 35 home runs this year, and he finishes as catcher one. Now, Alvarez has shown issues with strikeouts, so that's obviously something to note and think about here. But he still hit 25 home runs last year in 123 games, and that was just 423 plate appearances that he did. So I think it's a real possibility that we see Alvarez mash 35 this year, and I think he sees the average tick up a little bit. Let's say he hits 240, and even he finishes as the catcher one. Now, obviously, Adley Rutschman is a very good catcher and appears to be the lock for the top catcher spot, but I'm going to say that Alvarez takes that from him this year. Not to say he will be ranked as the dynasty catcher one next year, but I'm going to say he finishes this year as C1 with 35 home runs. There's no denying the power with Alvarez. We've seen it. He puts up some mammoth home runs. He gets that poolside and absolutely obliterates baseballs. High barrel rate, high exit velocities, good hard hit rates. Alvarez takes that step forward that we want to see, and you're going to be very happy if you roster Francisco Alvarez this year. So he hits 35, finishes as C1 is the next bold prediction.
Yeah, that's certainly bold. I was actually looking at this the other day, so I was able to pull this up quickly. We've only had four catchers, technically three catchers, one guy did it twice, but four instances that a catcher hit 35 home runs in the season in the 21st century. So I want to see if you can guess. So two were Mike Piazza, back-to-back 2000-2001. We had Salvi a couple years ago when he hit 48. Who was the third one, Chris? This is 2003. I think you can get this one.
I do, because actually this was the year I remember going to my first Braves game. It was Javi Lopez.
Sure was.
I remember my first Braves game that I remember, he homered in that year. He hit 43. That was it. I always remember that, 43 homers that year.
In the nose, he had 43 home runs, 109 RBI, 89 runs scored, and hit 328, 378, 687. That is
pretty good.
Is that, I'm gonna sort this by slug real quick. Yeah, that's the highest slug of any catcher in a single season this century. About 20 points ahead of Pudge Rodriguez. Man, I loved Pudge Rodriguez. And then Mike Napoli. Who doesn't love Mike Napoli? Mitch Garver, and then Mike Piazza there in fifth. Yeah, that's definitely bold. I you know, I've always questioned where the average ends up with Alvarez, but I've seen the power firsthand. The power is absolutely there for sure. All right, my next one here. I'm going with a kind of a powerful guy as well. And I would say Christian Encarnacion Strand finishes as a top five fantasy first baseman this year. And on the surface, that might not seem too bold because obviously he's got a lot of talent, he's got a lot of power, but it's looking at the top of this first base where you got Harper, you got Freeman, Vlad, Olsen, Pete, Cassis, the list goes on and on. So he's going to have to finish ahead of some of those guys, or at least one or two of those guys, to get up into the top five finish this season. But I think he can absolutely do it. You know, he's hitting well this spring. Came up and hit 13 home runs last year and 241 plate appearances. Some unfortunate suspensions and injuries have pretty much locked in everyday playing time for him. There's a little bit of a question of that about a few weeks ago before these all happened. First base, maybe he gets a little bit of corner outfield in here and there, but should be playing regularly. He gets 650 plus plate appearances. He in that ballpark, this guy could hit 35 in a neutral park. But you put him in Great American Ballpark, I mean, I don't know what the odds are on him having the most home runs in baseball this year. He's like a dark horse candidate, sure, but that'd be something to throw $10 down or something like that, because there is a chance that he could go 40 plus this year with his power in that ballpark. He already showed that last year, 48.4% hard hit rate, hit a ton of home runs in the minor leagues before coming up. And I think that lineup, even with some of the injuries and suspensions, that's still a very talented lineup in a very good park. So I'm saying he goes like 270. I'll even say 40 home runs and over 100 RBI as well. And I think that'll be enough to have him finish as a top five, first baseman. This guy was just built for hitting power, hitting the ball in the air. Ground ball rates are only 34.5%. A lot of fly balls, higher than league average by about 8%. A lot of line drives as well. And really, he hits the ball to all fields too. He can go oppo, he can go hit center, He can obviously pull it. Zone contact was actually right around league average. Whiff contact rate, a little below league average, but not too bad. Chase, again, he's always been an aggressive guy, but has the contact skills to make it work. And yeah, I think he's going to be top five first baseman this year. That's why I have a lot of shares of him in both the redraft and dynasty. And I'm really looking forward to seeing what a full year of Christian Encarnacion Strand looks like. So that's my next one. Back over to you, sir.
All right. Yeah, all the opportunities there for CES to have a good year. So it's funny how that lineup thinned out very quick after being very full.
These things always have a way of working themselves out. Unfortunately, it's as always happens, it seems. And it sucks that it came at the expense of two guys that I have a lot of shares of, and McLean and Noelvi, but oh well.
Yep. But let's keep going. I'm going to go with the pitcher, and I'm going to say that this is probably not a bold prediction. Paul Skeens debuts late April, which I don't think is all that bold, because they're starting him in AAA, and the chances that we see Skeens after four or five starts, I'd say, are pretty high. I think that he's going to get his run in Indianapolis. They are going to sell a ton of Paul Skeens jerseys. They're going to sell out those games. Indianapolis gets all of its fanfare for Skeens, and then they ship him off to the big league team after four or five starts. I want to look at their schedule and see when they're at home, because that may dictate, because I think that you'll likely see Skeens at least get a couple of home starts in Indianapolis before he goes off. It just makes sense, in my opinion. They're home the first week of April. They're home the third week of April, and they're home that last week leading into May. So I wouldn't be shocked if we see him at least get three home starts, so maybe five total starts, and then get shipped off. And maybe it's not even outlandish to say that Skeens is a top five or top 10 arm. Excuse me, not a good five, but top 10 arm, given the talent. I'm sick and tired of hearing about the fastball shape. It doesn't matter when you throw 100 plus and you dot it wherever you want to. It just doesn't. He's got a changeup that might be a plus or better pitch that he never had to throw in college. You saw him make Jackson Holliday look silly with it. The slider is plus pitch. His command is extremely good. And he's so durable. This guy can go, he was going 120 pitches regularly, which is absolutely wild. LSU is pushing him to the limit. And I was shocked that, honestly, he even pitched professionally last year after being drafted, after how much he pitched at LSU. You look in the regular season last year, he threw 122 and two thirds. It's not even factoring the postseason, which is wild. And then he came out and threw six more innings in professionally. So Skeens can go deep. We saw the talent level on display for an inning of spring breakout. The dude's just built differently. Right now, I think that him and Jackson Jobe have separated themselves as the best pitching prospects in baseball. Mm. The difference is we will see Skeens very quickly. It'll probably be later in the year before we see Jobe. But Skeens comes up, dominates. I'll say I think he can throw 150 MLB innings if he comes up the very beginning of May. Not unrealistic to think. And he finishes as a top 10 arm. He's just that good. And next year, he may be drafted among the top 10. I think he'll be a top 50 pick this time next year. I think the assignment in AAA was telling, and everybody's like, why wouldn't he in the majors? Why wouldn't he in the majors? But to me, that was very telling to see him in AAA. Like, I thought he would potentially go back to Altoona for a couple starts in AA, but AAA, that tells me that they're calling him up pretty soon. That's my read on the situation. There's nobody blocking him. You got Keller and Jared Jones. Nobody else is blocking Skeens. So let's do it, baby. Paul Skeens, top 10 pitcher this year.
What? So you're saying who even is in the rest of that?
Marco Gonzalez.
Yeah, Marco Gonzalez. Oh, yeah, Bailey Falter, Martin Perez. What are you saying? Those guys aren't holding back Paul Skeens?
No, unfortunately not.
No, I was completely dead wrong. I thought he was going to be under 50 innings this year. Yeah, obviously that's not going to be the case if they're signing him to AAA. So I was wrong on that one. Yeah, I think he's up early. And yeah, him and Jobe, I definitely agree. And Horton, I like Horton a lot. But yeah, I have Skeens and Jobe as the one too. I still have Jobe one, but it's basically 1A and 1B with these two. Obviously, both very talented arms. And we'll see one of those guys very soon. It's going to be a very exciting time in Pittsburgh. All these fun young players they have on their team. We'll see if they can start winning some games here. I'm also going over to the pitching side for this one. And I'm going to say Tariq Skubal finishes the year as the SP2 for fantasy purposes, obviously behind Spencer Strider. I'm not going that bold and saying he's going to be better than Strider with how Strider has looked and the pitches he's added to his repertoire. But coming into the offseason, I was trying to throw cold water on the Skubal as a top 10 pitcher narrative. And the more I dug in to try and throw that cold water on Skubal, the more I ended up liking Skubal. And now I'm just all in on Skubal. He's pitched very well this spring, 257 ERA in four starts, 19 Ks to four walks in 14 innings. Now, he made some adjustments last year. He talked about that both mechanically and in terms of pitch usage, which was really huge for him. As you know, you look at what he was in 2022, he was slider 31%, four seam 26.5%, sinker 21%, changeup 15%, knuckle curve 6.5%. Fast forward to 2023, you know, the knuckle curve is still down there at 6.5%, but four seamer now up to 36%, so about 9.5% more. Changeup to 24.5%, about 9.5% more. Slider down to 20.6, so about 10% less. And sinker was less to about 9%. So more fastball or four seamers and changeups, fewer sliders and sinkers. And it was a very worthwhile change for him. The changeup is one of the best changeups in all of baseball. 50.6% whiff rate on that pitch. 206 batting average against on the four seamer. He can miss bats with that as well. He can use his pitches to both sides of the plate. He's good command and control as well. 4.5% walk rate last year, among the best marks in baseball. His xERA was even lower than his 2.80 ERA. xERA was 230. It's everything. He gets ground balls, limits hard contact fairly well too. It's everything that you want to see from a guy that's going to be a top five pitcher. Yeah, he's 27. I'd be wishing he'd be doing this more at 23, 24. Had some injuries to deal with, and he was pretty good his first couple seasons as well. But obviously, last year was the big breakout, and I think that's just the start, just the beginning of some dominant years as a top five annual pitcher. And so, yeah, I think he's going to be the SP2 this year behind Strider and be drafted as such next year. What do you got next, Chris?
All right, let's go back to the hitting. I think this is a player that we both like and have talked about a lot. I have significantly corrected my ranking on him. I don't know why. Like, I wasn't higher in my prospect ranks on Parker Meadows, but Meadows is an absolute dude. He is going to go 25-25 this year. 25 homers and 25 stolen bases, which I don't think is all that crazy. Maybe it's a little bit bold, but he's gone two straight years of having 20 home runs and 20 stolen bases. So I don't see why that could not be the case again this year. Last year, he did debut and was really solid. He had three homers, and he did steal eight bags. So he totaled for 22 and 27 last year. After 2022 season, in 127 games, having 20 home runs and 17 stolen bases. So I was just slightly off on the stolen base, the 2020 for two straight years, but still two straight 20 homer seasons and then a 27 and 17 stolen base season. Meadows hits for solid contact. He has really good end zone contact rates. He lifts the ball with ease. He does a lot of things well, and he is going to be the leadoff man, it looks like, in Detroit, the everyday center fielder, and he's coming off an incredibly hot spring where he was excellent. He hit four homers. He had three doubles and a triple, and he slashed 407, 706. Really good numbers. Obviously, don't care a lot about spring numbers, but it just goes to show you how good Parker Meadows has been the last 2 years and even entering this year as well. So I don't think it's outlandish at all to say he goes 25-25. Maybe it's slightly bold, but I do think that even with that park, there's questions of, will the park affect him? And yeah, I don't think that's the case. So at the end of the day, I think Meadows is going to be a really good asset. I think he may push up to be a top 50 dynasty asset, which is crazy. But if you can go 25-25, I think you're pretty worthy of a top 50 spot. At worst, a top 75 spot. So Parker Meadows is going to be a dude this year. He is going to be, he's 24 now, so it'll be his age 24 season. So yeah, still plenty of prime peak years ahead of him. I'm really pumped about what Parker Meadows can do and bring to the table. And I think everybody should be on board with this.
Absolutely. Y'all know I agree. Been talking about Meadows all offseason as well. And that's going to be a pretty fun, like, top four in that to the Detroit lineup. Bottom half, maybe not so much, but no, we're adding Colt Keith in there too. That's going to be a sneaky good lineup there in Detroit, especially the upper half of that. He's going to be leading off in front of Carpenter, in front of Torque, in front of Green. I think this would be a pretty good year for Mr. Meadows there. My next one, I'm going Victor Scott. He's going to be the major league leader in steals this year and finish as a top 50 overall player. We've seen Esteban Ruiz really did that last year, but Scott's a better hitter than Ruiz is. We've seen both Kisnaisov Scott out in the Arizona Fall League, and every ball he hit was hard. Like, all the quality of his bats were very good. He looked very comfortable at the plate. And yeah, is he going to be a guy that hits a ton of home runs? No, absolutely not. Is he probably peak at 15? Sure. But I think he can get to that 10-12 home run range over a full season. And he's going to be starting in center field on opening day. Now, unfortunately, that came at the expense of Dylan Carlson, who has an AC joint issue after that collision with Jordan Walker the other day. So that's unfortunate, but does open up the playing time for Scott. And I think he's going to run with it, no pun intended. And Steele, man, this is a guy that stole between the minor leagues and the Arizona Fall League, which combined for 155 games, stole 112 bags. I don't know what number I want to say. I think 60 is easily attainable, maybe even 70. If he's up for the full year and in the lineup regularly, that's an easily attainable number. And if he's getting up there, 8, 9, 10 home runs, I think he's a hit for a solid average. Career 290 hitter in the minor leagues, good contact skills. It doesn't strike out a lot, can get on base as well. Last year, hit 303. In spring training this year, so far, he's hitting 316 with a 409 OBP, not hitting for much power this spring. But again, you're going to want him for the speed. Maybe he works his way up near the top of the order at some point. I'm not sure where he's going to fall in the order initially. We shall see. But if he's going 8-9 home runs, 60-plus DOs, and solid average, and maybe even a decent amount of runs scored, that's going to get you up near that top 50 overall for sure. And I think he's a guy that, unlike Ruiz, who we've seen fizzle out because he did it last year, but is he even a full-time player? I don't think we risk that with Scott because he's a better hitter. He's a better defender. He's a good defender in center field, which obviously brings value to a major league franchise. So I think this is going to be Scott for years to come, patrolling center field there in St. Louis and stealing a ton of bases. I'd say over the next 10 years, the easy choice to have the most steals in baseball for the next decade is Victor Scott. So I'll say steals 60 plus, leads MLB in steals, and is a top 50 player this season. If you haven't gone and added them yet, what are you waiting on? Because this is a league winner in the stolen base department.
Yeah, the nice thing is you don't even need him to be like really elite anywhere else because he's going to be so good. Standpoint, yeah, no need to comment any more further about Scott because he's really good. There's been a lot of Twitter fights about him, but just know that he is really good. Nothing else needs to be said. All right, back to the pitching. This one might be a little more controversial because people, for some reason, just really love to hate this guy. It's Shane Bieber. Everybody just like loves crapping on Bieber that he's not a good pitcher.
Is it just the name? Everyone likes to hate Justin Bieber. So it's just like if you have the last name Bieber, no matter like how good you are in your profession, it's just like a name that people shit on.
Yeah, there's a Joel Bieber lawyer around here.
So is there really?
It's a catchy commercial. It's like, call Joel Bieber. It's really annoying. It gets stuck in your head. But yeah, I guess Bieber, everybody just loves to hate on that last name. But it's so funny. I don't understand the hate considering like last season sucked for him. He still was really good. Like we're not talking about somebody that just floundered and was like a 5 ERA. Like this guy still had a sub 4 ERA at 3.80. His FIP and XFIP were both below 4. And it came on the year where his fastball velocity dipped dramatically. Bieber's been as consistent as they come year over year. He's been freaking good. He throws innings. He's durable as all get out. If you look back since 2019, he's a career 3.07 ERA, which is wild. There's always the caveat, though, that when the fastball is down, he's been a little worse. And when the fastball's up, he's been much better. So the good news is that the fastball velocity has actually been up all spring. I'm not going to say where he went because everybody hates that too now. He went to a facility this offseason and he worked out. He went to Driveline
And I ask you, does it rhyme with Schmive time?
How he went to Driveline. And I know not everybody that goes to Driveline, it works out. But Bieber got his velocity back. He got his spin rates back up with the breaking balls. The secondaries looked really good. And you know what the results have been there so far this spring? He is one. I don't care a lot about spring stats, but for Bieber, I just care about him being on the mound, looking good, and flashing what we want to see out of the arsenal. And the fastball velo has been up. We're looking at the secondaries being really solid. He's missing bats again. And I think Bieber has a strong bounce back season this year. I'll go on the record and just say that he is a top 10 arm. It's bold predictions. So we're just going to say he finishes as a top 10 arm this year. A lot of it comes down to he throws a lot of innings. He's had two seasons in which he eclipsed 200, 214 back in 2019, 200 in 2022. So we're not far removed from that. He just goes deep into starts. He's their opening day starter. He's keeping the ball on the ground more. He's back missing bats. I think that Bieber bounces back. And you know, everybody's been clamoring to sell him after the Driveline stuff and the decent spring, but I'm buying back in. Bieber's still just 28 years old. There's still plenty of good days ahead for Shane Bieber. If you want to hate on him, hate on the name, that's cool. But I'm buying back in where I can because I do think he's the cost is lower than ever, and it's a chance to return a really good investment.
So, Chris, would you call yourself a believer?
Not quite, but we'll go with it for the show purposes.
It's funny. I've never been like the biggest Bieber guy. And is he ever going to be as good as he was in 2020? No, it was a shortened 2020 season. And he had a phenomenal, 13 start stretch when he had that. I don't remember what the numbers were, sub 2 ERA, bunch of strikeouts, etc. But he doesn't need to be. And I think people treat him like the bottom fellow, like it has for Alec Manoa or Jack Flaherty, although he's been looking better this spring over the last few years. And it didn't. Like he's shown that even when he's not top notch Bieber, he's still a solid arm in this game. Yeah, he's not flashy. Doesn't throw 97, 98. Doesn't need to. So, yeah, I'm probably not as high on him as you are, but I do think we're going to see a nice bounce back from Bieber this season. I'm going to Cincinnati and again, but going with technically this is a prospect, but yeah, I think he's contributed a lot at the major league season, at the major league level this season, excuse me. And that's Blake Dunn. I'm going to say he's going to be a top 50 fantasy outfielder this season. He's not going to be up on opening day, I don't think, but I think he's going to be up soon into the season. There's still, obviously, there's already been some injury, some suspension, and obviously there's a lot of other injury-prone guys in that outfield, like Jake Fraley, for instance. Friedel's already hurt, so I think you could see a lot of Blake Dunn this season, who I think is one of the most undervalued prospects in all of baseball. Yeah, he's 25. He'll be 26 in September. Great. He's older than most prospects. I don't care. I look at the skill set here, and I see a fantasy-friendly skill set. I mean, look at last year, 23 home runs, 54 steals between high A and double A in 124 games, slash 312, 425, 522. Now, I don't think he's going to be a 25-homer guy, even at Great American Ballpark. As I think, if you're looking at overall, he's probably below-average game power, but that could still be like a 16, 18-homer guy at Great American Ballpark, and maybe even first to 20. Yeah, I think people are selling his power a little bit short. Again, not a big power guy, but I think he'll have enough power to be at least in that 15 to 20 range annually. He's a good athlete, so 20-plus steals, and solid hitter as well. 270 type of guy, can get on base. Walk rate was over 10% last year and for his minor league career. So not going to be a stud, but does a lot of things well and will be in the most hitter-friendly ballpark in baseball. With Great American Ballpark, really, he obviously was running 9 plate appearances, but went 4-for-7 this spring with a double, steal, 2 walks, 2 Ks. So I think he's going to be up sooner rather than later and be a top 50 outfielder this season. And maybe a guy that's, heck, maybe he flirts with top 100 dynasty status by the end of the season. I think that's probably a bit bolder than the first one here, but I think that very undervalued. Fun profile, and I think you're going to see a lot of him this year. So go out and get him. I think he's a great target right now, and that's my bold prediction that he'll be a top 50 player outfield this year.
All right, let's wrap it up with a fun one and one that I've come around a lot on. I will say this was not somebody I was even looking at prior to the turn of the calendar this year. That's Zach Littell with the Rays, and my bold prediction is that he is the best starter starting pitcher, at least, on the Tampa Bay Rays this year. Yeah, and that includes Zach Eflin. That includes some pretty solid names. You look at this profile, and Littell is interesting. I think that he ultimately has shown things that I'm like, okay, can this guy be legit? And then, yeah, I think it is. Last year, you look at the surface, and he had a 4.10 ERA, which is whatever. But the pinpoint command is there. He doesn't walk batters. He's made some changes this offseason where it's, okay, I can buy into this profile where I think Littell ends up being a really solid arm. You know, the results this spring have been good. I like the fastball better than most. He's missing enough bats. I think if he can just be like a 25% K rate guy, he was 19.5% last year. And I don't think 25% is outrageous, but I think if 25%, that makes a really solid arm. Certainly, he walked 3.2% of batters last year. And think about this. George Kirby was in that walk range last year, and Kirby doesn't miss bats at all that high of a clip either. Kirby struck out 22.7% of batters last year with a 2.5% walk rate. So if you think, oh, he can't be a solid starting pitcher because he doesn't strike out guys, everybody loves George Kirby, and he doesn't strike out guys. So why can't Zach Littell be that guy that takes a jump? And I'm not saying he's going to be George Kirby. I don't think he's going to be George Kirby. But I do think that Zach Littell is massively underrated. I think he comes out and has a really good year, and he ends up being a player that everybody wishes they had drafted at a very low cost, ends up being the best starting pitcher in Tampa Bay.
A lot of fun, sneaky values there in Tampa Bay this year, especially with like him and Papio. So we'll see on that one here. And a good transition into my last guy here, because my last guy also is a kind of pinpoint guy, a guy that I have compared, or not compared to, but I called him in an article recently on FDN, I called him Diet Kirby, and that is Christian Scott, who I believe is going to be a top 40 starting pitcher this season, or bold prediction that he could be a top 40 starting pitcher this season. Another guy that's, you know, a little bit older than you'd like to see. He didn't really fully break out until this past year, even though he did have some success in the past. 2.57 ERA this past year in 19 starts, 107 strikeouts. There we go. To 12 walks this past season. So 12 walks in 87 2/3 innings. That is absolutely phenomenal. He was one of just three pitchers this past season to have an xFIP under 3, batting average against under 200, and a 20%+ K minus walk rates. Cade Horton and Drew Thorpe were the other two. And he was looking pretty impressive this spring as well. Velo's even up a tick. In his last outing back on the 20th, he averaged 95.5 miles an hour, topped out at 96.5 on his sinker. And in my live look last year, was 93-94, topped out at 95, and that was in July. So up a tick there. Sweeper can miss bats. Slider can miss bats as well. Both did the spring in that last outing. Yeah, the upside isn't astronomical, but I think when he settles in, he's going to be a top 40, top 50 caliber arm because the floor is so high, one of the highest floors of any pitching prospect in all of baseball. Look at that Mets rotation. He's going to get a lot of run this year. I think he's up very early. I think he gets 25+ starts, could be flirting with 140 innings or so, and I think that would be enough for him to provide top 40 or so value as a pitcher. So, like Christian Scott a lot, still very undervalued because he's not flashy. Paul Skeens, obviously, or Jackson Joe, but very good pitcher here to be had, and I think he's a great target right now. And that will wrap up our bold predictions this year. Obviously, the prospect one last episode, MLB guys this time. A lot of fun always doing these episodes every year, and I hope you all enjoyed it as well. Thank you to all the listeners for tuning in. We'll be back with you again on Friday. Talks a little prospects to stash this season with a lot of good names to talk about in that episode. But until then, everyone take care.
KFC, everyday value meets big flavor.
That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.